Sex, shame, and hypocrisy form the complex tapestry of modern Morocco, where an ancient culture collides with contemporary desires. Leila Slimani's Sex and Lies arrived like a thunderbolt in 2017, triggering intense debate across North Africa and beyond. The book became a cultural phenomenon, with celebrities from Emma Watson to Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie praising its unflinching examination of sexual repression. What makes this work particularly powerful is Slimani's unique position as both insider and outsider, a Franco-Moroccan writer who understands the nuances of both worlds without being fully claimed by either. When Slimani toured Morocco after publishing her novel Adele, women approached her privately, desperate to share their own stories of sexual frustration and double lives. These confidences became the foundation for Sex and Lies, a work that has since inspired a manifesto signed by over 20,000 supporters demanding an end to Morocco's criminalization of consensual adult relationships. Through these intimate testimonies, Slimani reveals not just individual struggles, but a society on the verge of transformation, where young people increasingly demand the right to privacy and bodily autonomy in a system designed to deny both. In Morocco, a woman's body is rarely her own, existing instead as a vessel for family honor and societal expectations. From early childhood, girls are methodically conditioned to view their virginity as a precious commodity, belonging not to themselves, but to their family, future husband, and society at large. "Don't forget," Soraya's mother would whisper when dropping her off anywhere, a coded reminder to preserve her hymen at all costs. This obsession with female purity has created an entire shadow economy of deception. Hymen restoration surgeries costing thousands of dirhams, Chinese-made artificial hymens sold in back alleys, and elaborate sexual workarounds that preserve technical virginity while satisfying desire. Some doctors report performing multiple hymen reconstructions on the same woman, highlighting the cycle of deception and shame. The psychological consequences of this fixation are devastating and far-reaching. Women describe sex lives defined by shame, fear, and dissociation, often unable to experience pleasure without guilt. They engage in alternative sexual practices, anal sex, heavy petting, oral stimulation, to preserve their hymens while technically remaining virgins. This creates a paradoxical culture where actual sexual activity is rampant but never acknowledged. Men, shaped by these same social forces, divide women into two rigid categories: nice girls for marriage and others for pleasure, perpetuating a Madonna whore complex that damages both genders. The Lebanese poet Jumana Haddad brilliantly captures this dynamic, noting how mothers perpetuate misogyny by raising sons like demigods while teaching daughters to be docile and fearful, creating generation after generation of damaged relationships. For teenage couples, finding privacy becomes a nearly impossible quest, fraught with danger and exploitation. Hotels require marriage certificates and routinely report suspicious couples to authorities. Parents monitor their daughters' movements through family networks, tracking apps, and community surveillance. Public spaces offer little sanctuary, forcing young lovers to meet in cars, construction sites, and isolated beaches, constantly fearing police patrols, not for safety, but for bribes that can reach hundreds of dirhams. The criminalization of consensual sex creates a climate where exploitation flourishes and genuine intimacy becomes nearly impossible, pushing relationships into shadows where abuse often goes unreported. This system of control extends beyond individual relationships to shape Morocco's entire social fabric, influencing everything from education to employment opportunities. As one interviewee notes, "By controlling women's bodies and sexuality, men have dominated across civilizations. Women subjected to such severe social control cannot fully participate as citizens, creating a society where half the population lives in perpetual anxiety about exposure and punishment." The most tragic manifestation of this system was Amina El Filali, a 16-year-old who committed suicide in 2012 after being forced to marry her rapist, an arrangement legally sanctioned under Penal Code Article 475, which allowed rapists to escape prosecution through marriage to their victims. Though this law was finally repealed in 2014 following public outrage, the underlying social attitudes remain largely unchanged, continuing to trap women between tradition and autonomy.
"Do what you like, but do it in private," could be Morocco's unofficial motto regarding sexuality. This institutionalized hypocrisy creates a society where nearly everyone lives a double life, maintaining careful facades while engaging in forbidden behaviors behind closed doors. Zor, a fiercely independent young woman, observed at university that everyone, and I mean everyone, was fucking. Even heavily veiled women maintained secret sex lives. These same students who engaged in intimate relationships would often be found the next day attending religious student group meetings or publicly supporting conservative social policies. This duplicity extends to the highest levels of society, creating a complex web of public performance and private reality. In 2016, two senior figures from the Islamist PJD party, who had built careers condemning vice, were caught in the act of adultery in a car parked in a beach resort. Fatima Najjar, who had spent years lecturing young women that their mere gaze and laughter could incite fornication, and Mulai Omar Ben Hamad, who had issued numerous fatwas against modern dating practices, including love letters on Facebook, found themselves at the center of a scandal that exposed the deep contradictions in Moroccan society. Their humiliating arrest and subsequent public shame demonstrated how quickly one could fall from moral authority to social pariah. The enforcement of Morocco's morality laws reveals an equally hypocritical system based on class and connections. Mustafa, a veteran policeman with 20 years of experience, candidly admits, "We can't apply the laws," explaining that police selectively target the poor and powerless while turning a blind eye to wealthy offenders. "There's no morality in it, no faith. It's the law of cash," he confesses, describing an elaborate system where bribes determine who faces punishment. Officers routinely accept payments from nightclub owners, brothel operators, and wealthy individuals to avoid enforcement. This selective enforcement creates a society where everyone is technically a criminal, giving authorities tremendous power to punish selectively based on political or personal motivations. The culture of secrecy particularly impacts education and health. Most Moroccan women receive no sexual education beyond sterile scientific biology classes that avoid any practical discussion of sexuality or relationships. Many learn about their bodies through traumatic experiences or years of confusion and misinformation. Fatih Badi, who co-hosted a groundbreaking call-in radio show about sexuality, was overwhelmed by the depth of ignorance she encountered, receiving up to 3,000 calls per night. These calls revealed tragic stories of forced marriages, marital rape, and sexual violence from people who lacked even basic understanding of their bodies or rights. Women would call describing serious medical conditions they'd hidden for years out of shame or fear. This enforced ignorance serves a calculated political purpose. As Zor astutely observes, "We are keeping people frustrated. That way, their primary concern is how and with whom they'll get a screw, instead of starting a revolution over their living conditions." Sexual repression becomes a sophisticated tool for maintaining broader social control, diverting energy from political organizing into managing secret lives. The system creates subjects who are simultaneously transgressive and ashamed, making them easier to control through the constant threat of exposure. Behind Morocco's public facade of propriety lies a landscape of sexual violence that remains largely unaddressed. Nearly every woman interviewed for the book shared stories of abuse, assaults, or exploitation, experiences they had rarely spoken about before. The pervasiveness of this violence cuts across social classes, education levels, and urban-rural divides, creating a web of shared trauma that binds Moroccan women together in silent suffering. Noor was molested by a cousin at age 5, leaving her unable to tolerate physical contact with boys throughout adolescence. The trauma manifested in severe anxiety attacks whenever male classmates came too close, affecting her education and social development well into her 20s. Zor was gang-raped at 15, but feared telling her parents, knowing they might blame her for encouraging the men. She spent years battling depression and self-blame, finding solace only in a support group she discovered by chance a decade later. The author's housekeeper matter-of-factly describes marital rape as commonplace, with husbands demanding sex multiple times daily regardless of their wives' wishes. She recounts how neighborhood women gather in kitchens, sharing stories of brutality masked as conjugal rights. She mentions neighborhood tragedies, women with AIDS abandoned by partners, girls impregnated by relatives who either hide or commit suicide. In one particularly haunting case, a 16-year-old girl jumped from her family's apartment after discovering her pregnancy, leaving behind a note begging forgiveness for bringing shame. This violence exists in a legal framework designed to silence victims rather than protect them. Until 2014, Article 475 of the Moroccan Penal Code allowed rapists to escape punishment by marrying their victims, a practice that ended only after the suicide of 16-year-old Amina Falali sparked national protests. Abortion remains criminalized except in extremely limited circumstances, forcing hundreds of women daily into dangerous backstreet procedures. Conservative estimates suggest over 600 illegal abortions occur daily in Morocco. Children born outside marriage face severe stigma, leading to thousands of abandoned babies yearly, with orphanages and children's homes struggling to cope with the numbers. The culture of shame, hashuma, prevents addressing these issues openly. Mustafa, the policeman with 20 years of experience, laments that Morocco cannot confront serious problems like pedophilia, incest, rape, the prostitution of minors, because acknowledging them would disrupt the social order. He describes how families often withdraw complaints even in clear cases of abuse, preferring to handle matters privately to avoid scandal. Instead, victims are expected to maintain silence to protect family honor and community stability. For women like Rim, this silence becomes a prison. Through two abusive marriages, her parents dismissed her concerns, telling her sex wasn't at all important for a couple, and God has chosen this for you. Her first husband routinely forced himself on her, while the second subjected her to psychological torture, convincing her she was worthless. Only through an affair did she realize how abnormal her marital experiences were. Now a therapist, she observes that Moroccan women cultivate a degree of patience bordering on stupidity in accepting violence and humiliation. She sees dozens of women weekly who share similar stories, yet few feel empowered to seek legal recourse or leave their situations. Morocco today exists in a state of profound ambivalence, torn between competing visions of its future. Since Mohammed VI's succession in 1999, the country has experienced unprecedented freedom of speech and social discourse. Media outlets, social networks, and street conversations now openly address previously taboo subjects like morality, sexuality, and personal freedoms. Women's magazines have become particularly bold, pioneering frank discussions about pleasure, relationships, and reproductive rights, while digital platforms have created new spaces for dialogue about intimacy and gender roles. Yet, public opinion remains deeply divided and predominantly conservative. A comprehensive 2014 survey revealed stark statistics. 84% of Moroccans oppose sexual freedom and 83% oppose tolerance for homosexuality, with women surprisingly emerging as more conservative than men on these issues. Urban-rural divides further complicate this landscape, with cities like Casablanca and Rabat showing more progressive tendencies while traditional values hold firm in rural areas. The authorities navigate this divide carefully, promoting Morocco's image as a modernizing nation, while repeatedly emphasizing the country's traditional Islamic values and moral framework. This fundamental tension creates striking contradictions in policy and practice. The 2015 abortion debate exemplifies this dynamic. After years of sustained activism highlighting the approximately 600 daily clandestine abortions and their health consequences, King Mohammed VI convened an unprecedented discussion among medical professionals, religious scholars, and government officials. despite initial optimism for comprehensive reform, the resulting legal changes were minimal, only slightly broadening access to include cases of rape, incest, and severe fetal abnormalities. The core contradiction remained unresolved: how to legalize abortion while maintaining strict laws against extramarital relations, creating an impossible legal and social paradox. The most passionate advocates for sexual freedom are often those who have experienced its restrictions firsthand. Feminist activists and human rights defenders, including prominent organizations like MOLLY, actively campaigned for the repeal of Article 490, which criminalizes sexual relations outside marriage. These groups document personal stories of persecution, organize public demonstrations, and leverage social media to challenge traditional norms. Former Minister Nuzza Scali has become a powerful voice against legal hypocrisy, pointing out how current laws increasingly diverge from social realities, particularly among young Moroccans. Meanwhile, conservative forces, particularly Islamist groups, have strengthened their opposition. MP Abuzed El Mokri regularly denounces what he terms permissive philosophies from Europe, framing the debate as a battle for Morocco's cultural identity. Justice Minister Mustafa Ramid's threat to resign over the potential legalization of extramarital relations demonstrates the depth of institutional resistance to change. The debate has become increasingly polarized, with conservatives dismissing modernists as a westernized elite out of touch with Moroccan values, while reformers point to widespread but hidden social changes that make current laws increasingly obsolete. This ideological battle plays out daily in courtrooms, parliament, media, and homes across Morocco, reflecting a deeper struggle over national identity and the country's future direction. The outcome of this cultural conflict will likely determine Morocco's social and political trajectory for generations to come. Despite pervasive social constraints, many Moroccan women are actively finding innovative ways to reclaim their sexual agency and challenge traditional taboos. Maha Sano's groundbreaking 2012 adaptation of the Vagina Monologues marked a watershed moment in this movement. Performed in both classical Arabic and Darija, Moroccan dialect, the production created unprecedented discussion spaces for women across social classes, from university students to domestic workers. The Arabic word mahbal, vagina, carries such strong cultural stigma that even medical professionals often avoid it, making these performances simultaneously shocking and emancipatory for audiences. The shows sparked heated debates, but also fostered solidarity among women previously isolated in their experiences. Fedwa Misk's founding of the feminist webzine Kandisha in 2011 represents another form of resistance through digital media. Named after a powerful female spirit in Moroccan folklore, the platform directly challenges religious conservatives' monopoly on defining morality. Misk's personal journey was shaped by her mother's radical rejection of traditional gender roles in 1970s Morocco, wearing miniskirts, pursuing a career, and raising her daughter to question social conventions. Though Article 490 of the Penal Code theoretically criminalizes all sexual relations outside marriage, Misk refuses to self-censor. "Just being myself is activism." Her work has inspired a new generation of feminist writers and activists. For Morocco's LGBTQ community, the internet has become an essential lifeline, creating protected spaces for connection and solidarity. Sites like lesbiansderabat.com operate with sophisticated security protocols to connect approximately 100 women while protecting their identities. These virtual communities transcend traditional class barriers, creating rare spaces where wealthy professionals and working-class women interact freely. However, the risks remain severe, illustrated by numerous cases of forced psychiatric treatment, family violence, and social ostracism. One lesbian woman's institutionalization after coming out to her parents highlights how medical establishments often pathologize non-conforming sexualities. Professor Abda Samad Dialmi's sociological framework places Morocco in the second of three stages of sexual legislation evolution. The first stage involves complete alignment between religious norms and practices. The second features growing gaps between official morality and actual behavior, while the third achieves harmony through modernized norms. current Moroccan society exemplifies the second stage's contradictions. Official institutions maintain conservative religious positions, while actual practices increasingly reflect secular values, particularly in urban areas. This hypocritical situation manifests differently across social classes, with educated urban women often leading changes in sexual attitudes despite facing intense scrutiny and potential backlash. The resulting tension between evolving social practices and static legal frameworks creates particular challenges for women and sexual minorities navigating personal freedom within structural constraints. While many believe Morocco's religious dominance prevents sexual liberation, historical Islam maintained a notably progressive stance on sexuality. Early Islamic teachings considered sex not just a means of procreation, but a divine gift and source of spiritual and physical balance. From the 9th-13th centuries, Islamic civilization witnessed a golden age of erotic literature, with scholars openly discussing pleasure, intimacy, and sexual health. Notable works like The Perfumed Garden and Encyclopedia of Pleasure demonstrate this cultural openness. Asma Lemrabet, a prominent reformist theologian, challenges contemporary misconceptions through meticulous textual analysis. She emphasizes that the Quran's relative silence on sexuality and virginity reveals how these modern obsessions stem from Mediterranean cultural practices rather than religious doctrine. Her research shows that Morocco's current anti-homosexuality legislation derives from French colonial legal code Article 489, not from traditional Islamic law. This colonial influence represents a broader pattern of Western impositions that altered local sexual attitudes. The historical trajectory of sexual attitudes in Islamic societies reveals a complex narrative. From the 19th century onward, Arab cultural decline coincided with increasingly puritanical views on sexuality. This shift was fueled by multiple factors: colonial subjugation, economic decline, and reactive Islamist movements that blamed moral laxity for societal weakness. These movements often selectively interpreted religious texts to justify stricter sexual controls, particularly over women's bodies. Lemrabet's work advocates for comprehensive reform in religious education, emphasizing liberation and ethical consciousness rather than fear and shame. She meticulously examines Quranic verses traditionally used to restrict women's sexuality, demonstrating their original context as guidelines for expanding sexual freedom within marriage. For instance, she highlights how verses about modesty were meant to protect women's dignity rather than restrict their movement or expression. The reformist perspective champions an indigenous model of sexual ethics that neither rejects tradition nor blindly adopts Western frameworks. Historically, Islam introduced progressive practices, permitting abortion within the first 120 days of pregnancy, protecting women's right to sexual satisfaction, and creating mixed-gender spaces for worship and scholarship. These historical precedents challenge current restrictive practices. This nuanced approach disrupts the oversimplified opposition between religious tradition and sexual liberation. The Moroccan women advocating for bodily autonomy aren't rejecting their cultural identity, but rather reclaiming its historically progressive elements. They face a complex challenge, defending sexual freedom while navigating accusations of Western cultural imperialism. The West becomes a paradoxical reference point, simultaneously representing threatening moral decay and aspirational freedom, where sexual openness is either envied or condemned as excessive decadence. The sexual tension in Morocco stems from the deep-seated conflict between modernity and traditional values, with women's bodies still controlled as guarantors of family honor and national identity. This tension manifests in daily life through dress codes, behavioral expectations, and social surveillance. Despite these constraints, many Moroccan women are moving beyond restrictive customs, inventing new spaces for freedom in both physical and digital realms, though they often pay a heavy social and emotional price. Men, too, increasingly aspire to love and personal freedom, though many find themselves disconcerted by women's rapid adaptation to modernization and struggle to reconcile traditional expectations with contemporary realities. Sanaa El Aji's groundbreaking research reveals the stark contradictions in Moroccan sexual attitudes through extensive fieldwork and interviews. Her thesis interviews showed that while men typically demand virgin wives as a non-negotiable prerequisite for marriage, women explicitly prefer non-virgin husbands, citing sexual experience as beneficial for the relationship. Women have developed sophisticated strategies to adapt to social prohibitions, preserving their hymens through alternative sexual practices like oral and anal sex, effectively reducing virginity to a mere physical attribute rather than a holistic state of chastity. El Aji notes the prevalent Menachian view. Women are categorized as either virtuous or prostitutes, with no recognition of the complex spectrum of female sexuality and desire that exists between these extremes. For many young Moroccans, particularly in urban areas, the path forward begins with honest conversation about sexuality, relationships, and personal autonomy. Rim exemplifies this new approach, having chosen to raise her daughter differently from her own upbringing by providing comprehensive sexual education and freedom from this cult of virginity that dominated her youth. Despite her traumatic experiences, she remains optimistic as she witnesses women increasingly claiming their rights and breaking the silence around sexual abuse, harassment, and assault. Lamrabet, observing these changes, notes hopefully that discussions previously considered taboo are now taking place in homes, schools, and social media platforms. The struggle for sexual liberation in Morocco is fundamentally intertwined with broader societal freedoms, particularly the right to think independently and question established norms. As Michel Foucault astutely observed, sexuality represents a dense transfer point for power relations, and in Morocco, sexual secrecy parallels political secrecy, producing individuals adapted to oppressive systems through self-censorship and internalized shame. By breaking these silences, by sharing their stories despite the risks of social ostracism, family rejection, and even legal consequences, the women in this book are claiming not just sexual freedom, but full citizenship in a society that has long denied them both. Their testimonies represent not just personal liberation, but a collective movement toward a more open and equitable society.